www.kpfk.org. If you believe in radio not sponsored by corporations but sponsored by you, the people, please call and make your pledge at 818-985-5735. That is 818-985-5735. Peace and love.
KPFK, Los Angeles. Hello and welcome to the Car Show on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, broadcasting on this channel, on this network, for over 50 years. I don't think any of us are 50 years old. Oh, wait, no. We are so sad. Maybe that was cruel. So we start out every show introducing who is on there. And I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn from AutoWeek.com. I've been writing about cars. I started in like 1985 in Germany writing about cars. And I have not stopped since because I'm completely unqualified to do anything else. Our friend and regular co-host, Ricardo, is away this week, but I am joined, as I am every week, by our Orange County Bureau Chief, a practicing attorney and owner of not one, but two Mazdas, a Miata, and an RX-8, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Good to be here with you again to talk about everything that's happening in the car world.
And this week, we are graced with the presence of a genuine auto industry analyst for iccars.com. He is going to try and say iccars.com as many times as he can. A veteran auto journalist, a member of the North American Car of the Year jury, Carl Brower. Thank you, Carl, for dialing in all the way from Detroit, the Motor City. Welcome.
I figured you guys wouldn't let me on unless I could up my car pedigree, but I was like, Mark, I'll be in Detroit. I swear I'm cool enough to be on the car show. I'll even be in Detroit that day. So you let me on.
The Motor City, the very Motor City. Well, welcome everybody. And we're going to jump right into it because, as we say sometimes, this is Southern California and the rest of the world is covering up their sports cars and their hot rods with tarps, putting them in barns. They're dragging the boats out of the water, wrapping them in plastic. We are going to keep going all winter long because it is always beautiful here. We have a full calendar of events. We're going to do 20 minutes of calendar, and I'm already wasting too many of them. If you listen to all this and you still want more, go to SoCalCarCulture.com. That is a great site. They have everything that you could ever ask for. We're going to start out again with Hot VW's Drag Day at Irwindale Speedway. That's October 27th. What day of the week is that, Michelle? You're our adult. She's going to look that up.
I think it's a Saturday.
That's between 7 and 3 p.m. It's held twice a year in SoCal. And if it is, in fact, a Saturday, you better hightail it down there.
Sunday.
Thank you, Michelle. That's tomorrow. Sunday. Tomorrow, Hot VW's Drag Day. As you recall, the muscle car era. Carl, you remember the muscle car era, right?
I love the muscle car era. It's what started my love affair with the car, was muscle cars specifically.
Yep. And muscle cars, as you know, 1973, the OPEC oil embargo came along and changed the whole world. And so muscle cars were no longer for sale. And we had all kinds of weird cars, Pintos, Crickets, Colts, and America trying to figure out a whole new world. But what we already had was the VW bug, and the VW bug filled the hole between the muscle car era and the import scene, and it did it well. And this is a celebration, historically, if you want to look at it that way, of that period. So VW Beetles stripped down, powered up, raced at drag strips across the country by enthusiasts on a budget. That is going to be, again, tomorrow, Irwindale Speedway, 7 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. You can drag race your car. You can hang out. You can park it in the show and shine. You can buy stuff at the swap meet. That will be a lot of fun. On the other end of the car spectrum.
Mm-hmm. I wish I still had my 79.
Well, you can probably buy one for like $200. It's not, they have not taken off in price, I don't think.
Aw.
I'm just thinking that.
Oh, I sold. Well, it was one of the Champagne editions. It was the white convertible.
We had a 77 Volkswagen van that was a Champagne edition. And I suspect that the guy was taking advantage of us by selling us that car. But we had it until I rolled it over in a snowstorm in Mammoth. Sorry.
Wow.
But we're going to talk about Volkswagen vans later. Carl and I have both driven that thing. We're still here on the calendar section. Okay, so vans, van life. The Adventure Van Expo is at the Ventura County Fairgrounds today and tomorrow. That's at 10 West Harbor Boulevard, Ventura, California. Today and tomorrow, 10 a.m. And Sunday, I think it ends at 3 p.m. So anybody planning on chucking it all and doing the vlog of the, I don't know, doing a van life vlog? Anybody? Anybody? Show of hands?
It's tempting. It's tempting.
I would never do that. It's really fun for like 2 days. And then, you know, you want to shower and cable TV and, I don't know, something other than junk food.
The Creature Comforts?
The Creature Comforts. So there's a lot of opportunity for you to check out there at the Adventure Van Expo, Ventura County Fairgrounds. Also, closer to home here, an event that I have never been to, and I really should have gone to it, Carcadia. Guess what city Carcadia is in? What Southern California city is Carcadia? Anybody? Anybody?
Come on.
Arcadia.
Yeah, very good. I think Carl knew it and was just being...
Yeah, facetious. He was being the silly kid. Okay,
this is
class.
On Route 66, Sunday, October 27th at the Starbucks at 733 West Naomi Avenue in Arcadia. That's 7 in the morning to 9 in the morning. So that's a lot going on tomorrow. And for next week, the Las Vegas Concours. Actually, it's called Concours at the Wynn Las Vegas. That happens November 1st through 3rd. I've heard reviews of it. Some people say it was good. It's on, at least it's on grass. You know, it's on a golf course, I think. It's not on a parking lot or anything like that. It's supposed to be a very nice thing for the tour. You know, usually the tours, they run through the Tuscan countryside or up the Amalfi Coast or something. Here, they go down the strip in Las Vegas. All the cars do that. So that's November 1st through 3rd, and I believe the Concours itself is on the 3rd. Check it out. More information at lasvegasconcours.com. Tickets start at $100. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but it's less than Pebble Beach, right? Okay.
A lot less.
A lot less. So, and then two more events. How much time do we have? We still have a lot of time. We can do a lot. You can plan ahead. You can plan ahead for the long, long way. Michelle, why don't you do the first one, the BMW thing?
Oh, the 17th annual Southern California Vintage BMW Meet is going to be on November 2nd. That's a Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Celebrating this year the E24 6 Series. All E24s enter for free. All right.
Yeah, and that's in Woodley Park in Van Nuys, which we all know from a couple of other shows there. And they list in their information here all the E's that are going to be celebrated.
Oh, my gosh, they sure do.
So we have E's 36, 34, 32, 31, 30, 28, 26, 24, 23, 21, 20, 12, 9, 6, and 3. And on top of that, you've got the 2002, which everybody loves, the Noia Classe, the original Noia Classe, the 700. I saw 3 700s at the BMW Classic Center in Munich once. They are really cool looking cars. And Isettas, they're all going to be out there.
Cute. I love those little Isettas.
I've been to this event, and as is always the case with these, there's always something that will surprise you there. So it's worth going out, and it's free. The hot tip is everybody parks across the street and does the death run across whatever that street is there. It's park on the same side. There's a parking lot just a couple hundred yards down before Woodley Park, south of Woodley Park. I say park there and just walk a bit. And there's no admission. It's free. And then that's Saturday, November 2nd. On Sunday, November 3rd is my favorite car show in the world, the Best of France and Italy, also taking place all day at Woodley Park in Van Nuys. I've been to every car show in the world. I just spent my own money to go to Chantilly, north of Paris. I've been to Villa d'Este. I've been to Pebble Beach about a billion times, and this is my favorite. There are so many cool cars. My own personal Lancia Appia will be there. Series 3, Lancia Appia. If you want to buy it, bring $10,000 cash or Bitcoin, and it is yours, baby. Yours. It's a fun day.
And get it while it's running.
You broke up there, Michelle. What did you say?
Are you kidding?
I didn't hear you.
I said get it while it's running.
It's running just fine. It's cost me enough money.
So buy it now.
Yeah, buy it now. It's a non-judged show from the Rough Restoration Project to the Sirius Concours offering. And believe it or not, there have been Bugattis there. There was a beautiful Bugatti Type 57 showed up the last couple of years, and I had never known that car, and it was a local family had it since, I think, the 50s, and they just drove it out. Jay Leno usually shows up with some huge thing with a long hood and a straight 8 engine. He'll be out there. Maybe, I don't know, we can't speak for Jay because we don't, you know, we're not that tight. He's a good guy, but... So he might be there, but there's always some really cool stuff. There tends to be a lot more Italian cars than French cars. I don't know why that is, but Carl, have you ever owned a French or Italian car? Or are you just all muscle cars and Porsches?
I have never owned a French or Italian car. No, I'm not that cool.
He had to put his fingertips together while he considered that because he's a muscle car Porsche guy.
The closest I got to something that creative was a 73 Saab Sonet. I did have one of those.
How was that for you?
It's actually pretty cool. Very light. Talk about steering feel. You know, no power assist or nothing. And about 2,000 pounds and that V4, like industrial European Ford engine that moved around that little fiberglass. You know, it was their attempt at like the Opel GT thing, but it was fun.
Yeah, that V4. I have a V4 powering the Lancia Appia too. So maybe we could have raced.
Yeah,
that would have been a bunch of fun, I'm sure. What could possibly go wrong with that idea? And then we're going out even farther out, November 8th and 9th, back at Irwindale Speedway again. Nitro Revival returns to Irwindale Drag Strip for the Feel Good Event of the Year. It's a, quote, museum in motion, unquote. Nitro Revival honors the glory days of drag racing. And I've been out to this event, and Steve Gibb puts it on, and there are guys who were who were pivotal to the NHRA success way back in the early days. Those who are still with us are there, and it's great to see them and these cars. They're going to have the largest cackle fest ever. Now, have you guys ever seen that? Carl, you've certainly seen a cackle fest, right? No? Nobody's seen this?
I have not seen a cackle fest.
I've never
had chickens.
It sounds like us when we get together to talk, but it's not. It refers to a bunch of slingshot dragsters get together, and they go in a circle, and they all start up, and you hear, bah, 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 bah. It's supposed to be pretty impressive. Ah. Actually, I have seen them, and it is pretty impressive. You put your fingers in your ear, and the fingers are almost touching, and your head's vibrating. So it's all free. Go to nitrorevival.com for the full event calendar. That is November 8th and 9th at Irwindale Speedway. Do not miss that. Then Saturday, November 9th, back at the Peterson Automotive Museum is a lowrider customization demonstration. So if you ever wondered how they make those things, how they make them hop and everything, there will be people there giving a demonstration of that, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Peterson Museum. They call it an exciting lowrider customization demonstration where you'll dive into the art of hydraulics, engraving, and pinstriping. Now, as you know, there's this really cool new exhibit of lowrider art. And even cynical old me, who thought he has seen everything, I went in there and I gasped. I actually gasped. It was very impressive, this collection. and then to see the collection and then to understand how they do it. One thing that I didn't know about was this engraving. So they actually engrave the metal in addition to just painting it or anything else. So that's pretty cool. I recommend that. Anybody around in the 80s and 90s?
It's a haze.
Around where?
It's a haze, but sure.
Like alive?
Yeah. Alive.
I technically was there.
Alive.
Because,
yes.
Because the next event, November 9th, also November 9th, is Radwood. The Radwood Car Show taking place November 9th in the Port of Los Angeles, 2400 Minor Street, San Pedro, a celebration of the 80s and the 90s. I myself, just speaking for myself, trying to forget those decades. But for a lot of people, not that many people, but some, they really like that stuff. So, there's people of a certain age, I guess younger than me, who really like that. Have you guys ever been to a Radwood show?
I love Radwood.
Nope.
You have? Nope. You've been, Carl?
Well, where else am I going to take my daughter's 1988 Pontiac Firebird Formula 350?
There you go. There you go.
Perfect. So
you've Perfect. Shown a car at a Radwood?
It was not technically shown. We were in the parking lot. We did dress up appropriately. I think I have a picture right on my desktop. I could probably bounce one to you guys right now and you could laugh heartily. But yes, we've gone to Radwood and done ourselves up fashion wise and had the Firebird there and walked through the official show cars. And then, like so many of these shows, you go to the parking lot of the non-show car section and it's like another car show, because
exactly.
Everyone
right.
like yes. us drives our enthusiast we enthusiastically drive our Radwood theoretically capable cars, but they're not good enough to be in the show. But then you walk through the parking lot, my daughter's like, I want one of those, I want one of those. I still remember she saw a yellow Fiero and she was like, I want one of those. And all so
oh
was it V6 or the straight four?
I think this was probably not because the Fiero GT was the one to get, and I think this was just it didn't have the cool roof beams that went back on the backside, so I think it was a four cylinder.
Okay. Well, so you would recommend a Radwood show?
I would. I mean, certainly, and I was about to say certainly if you remember that era and all that, but honestly, I know a lot. My daughter was born in 2000, so she wasn't quite around when Radwood cars were new, and she loves it. So I would say pretty much anybody would probably enjoy, because even if you don't remember those cars, the shape, the colors, or something about the 80s and between the music and the cars, I know so many people who shouldn't like the 80s because they weren't alive during them, and they do. So I would recommend anyone goes. If you're a car person, go to a Radwood. I bet you'll like it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good endorsement. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Radwood taking place at the LA Port, November 9th. The address, 2400 Minor Street, San Pedro, and endorsed by Carl Brower. There you go.
I'll be ordering my tickets. Seriously, my daughter and I will go. So.
Okay. Good. Good for you. Michelle, there's one down here about Mazdas.
Yeah,
scroll down. That's you.
You have to get ready for 7 stock because it's our 25th or 26th year, excuse me. Probably my 12th year, I think, of going to 7 stock. It's November 16th at Irwindale Speedway. And this year we are going to have the drag strip again. Last year was the first year you could do drag racing in your rotary powered vehicle. And that's $60. I just registered to have the RX-8 for show. They're going to have Mazda there this year again with the historical vehicles on display. And that means they're going to bring some things out of the garage that were prototypes, that are unusual, that are historic, plus the race cars. And if you want to register your ride, it's $40, or you can pre-purchase admission just to go and see everything, and that's $25. You have to go to either the Instagram page for 7 stock or go to tickets.thefote.com.
Oh, you cut out
Fote
there.
Is tickets. F-O-A-T. Dot,
yeah, you cut out there for the, a second. Tickets.
Okay,
dot,
I'll do it again.
Okay, go
tickets
ahead.
Tickets.thefote.com. It's thefote.com. And that's right. The service they use to get everyone registered. So that's November 16th, Saturday, and it's all day long. So if you're going to show, I know we usually get there around 7:30 and it's over around 3:00 and they have food trucks. So you're not going to starve. Yeah.
Okay. And speaking of not starving, one thing down in Mexico, SCORE Baja 1000 race weekend is that same weekend. The race actually starts for the motorcycles on Friday, November 15th. And then, as you know, every 30 seconds or a minute, the entries leave. And I think there are usually about 300 entries. Start with the motorcycles, the side-by-sides, the trophy trucks, the Beetles, everything. Down in Ensenada, Mexico, it is a spectacle that you don't want to miss. If there's any way you can get down south of the border, go for it. And, of course, don't forget NHRA Winter Nationals, November 14th to 17th at Pomona at the In-N-Out Burger Pomona Drag Strip.
Thank you. You finally got it right, Mark.
Go to NHRA.com. And you can find all the information and everything. And
Pomona,
and
that's it. That's where that Carcadia show was, right? Is that what we said?
No. See, Carl's being funny again.
Oh, Carl, listen, it's Arcadia.
We need an interpreter here. Or like on Big Bang Theory, we have to do a thing where they hold up the card for Sheldon where it says sarcasm.
Yes.
Okay, maybe nobody else watches that.
We have to move on to news.
News, baby, news. Okay, we're going to start out. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, there was a volunteer effort to restore a part of Hungry Valley State Vehicle Recreation Area up there by Gorman. It's a place where you can go and drive your off-highway vehicle off-highway. There are really cool places to go. There's a sort of a practice area with a steep hill that's all cemented in so you can practice four-wheeling and understanding what an open and a locking differential are. It's a great place. That is finally opening up. I believe it's opening up a week early. So as we speak, it is now open. However, the problem is only 100 vehicles will be allowed in each day, including 25 recreational off-highway vehicles. It sounds kind of... I don't know. We can say what we think about things, right? I think that sounds ridiculous. If it's open, it's open and you go for it. And it doesn't explain here why it's not open to more vehicles because I don't know. Hmm. So that's but if you go there and you're turned away because you're not one of the lucky 100, what's that? The Book of Revelation? How many people allowed into heaven? I can't remember. Anyway, if you're not one of those and you want an alternative, the Eastern Kern County Onyx Ranch State Vehicle Recreation Area, located in the Mojave Desert near Red Rock Canyon State Park, it did not burn. It is open for off-highway vehicle recreation. That's just one of several of these things throughout the state, but I think it's probably the closest. So if you get turned away there, keep going up the road to Eastern Kern County Onyx Ranch SVRA. They have 26,000 acres of area that you can just go and drive all over. Moving on, Michelle, the next one is all you because she actually read the article and Carl read the article. So they've done a little research. Go ahead, Michelle.
Well, if you think that there's burger wars going on between McDonald's and Wendy's and Jack in the Box, try the EV wars between the Germans and the Chinese. We have a little update on that because, unfortunately, Volkswagen, who is Germany's biggest automaker, has had trouble with their Chinese sales of their EVs in the third quarter of 2023. And this is something that's being tracked because the Chinese automaker BYD is putting out low cost and very innovative in terms of the technology and the features inside the car and in terms of the length of how much time you can drive before you have to recharge. In other words, range. And so they're actually slaughtering, for now, the Germans.
But can I just ask a question to intervene here? Do any of those cars meet any standards outside of China? I guess they do. They have to meet European standards.
Okay. Absolutely.
Well, they do meet the standards. Okay.
They do. And so this is a problem. Did you know Volkswagen owns Porsche, right? So Porsche reported that it had its lowest third quarter sales in the last 10 years, just last quarter. So, oops. They think that this is a problem because they're also slipping globally, not just against the Chinese, but they say in this Reuters article that Taycan models sank 47% globally, and that is their electric car.
Taycan.
So, Taycan?
Taycan, like Taycan Taycan. Okay.
Taycan.
So what's going to happen, Michelle? What does this mean for the U.S. market?
I think this means, and maybe Carl would like to challenge me on this.
He is an industry analyst.
So I want to hear what he has to say. That I think this is a canary in a coal mine for the Americans. I think the Americans are going to have to take note of this and say, maybe we ought to be more innovative, or maybe we should keep trying, or maybe the alternative should be forget it. We're just going to get slayed by the Chinese and their innovation and their low cost.
Carl, what do you think?
I think her last suggestion is the best one. Yes,
we're going to get slaughtered.
we're in a tough situation that's going to be hard for us to change. And if you want my full China download, well, maybe you don't, but you're going to get it anyways. So here's what happened really over the past like 30 years, right? All the European and American car companies just kind of were drooling over the size of the Chinese market, and they wanted that market. And so they went to China and said, we'd like to sell cars here. And China being, well, part of the culture that thinks in terms of decades and centuries instead of quarters and years, said, sure, you can sell your cars here, but you have to partner with an existing Chinese automaker and basically work with them to produce every car. Also known as, you'll be sharing all the intellectual property that you use to build your cars with our automakers. Not because we have a long-term plan to eventually build cars as well or better than you, and we're going to shorten the learning curve dramatically by having you work with us. And then once we build cars as well or better than you, we'll start to shrink your market share in our country, kick you back out, and you'll get 20 years of market access to China. And the next 1,000 years after that, we'll have cars as well or better built than you, and we'll dominate the rest of the planet. Not that they were thinking that at the time, I'm sure. But
is that sarcasm?
That just somehow happened, because China would have never been that devious to think like that 20 years ago. But what is happening now is, do you have your sarcasm sign to put up there?
I got it. It's ready.
Big Bang Theory. Ready. Okay. Anyways, the bottom line is that on cue, what has happened in the last 5 years? In the last 5 years, Chinese cars have gotten really good. Anyone who has been exposed to them has been surprised, because they weren't that good 15, 10, 8 years ago. They have gotten really good. And at the same time, the market share for all the non-Chinese car companies in China has fallen off. Volkswagen, Ford, General Motors, all the companies that sell over there, Mercedes, everyone who sells in China that's not Chinese has, for some reason, and again, hold the sarcasm, I don't know why, but it would appear that maybe when it's time to not need the foreign car companies to teach us how to build cars, we can turn some various screws, anything from maybe having some influence over our citizenry. Some would suggest that maybe if there's a country out there where the government has as much or more influence over the citizens than any other country on the planet, China might be one where maybe there's a little more influence over the citizens. But whatever the reason, the sales of non-Chinese cars in China are falling like a rock, just as the Chinese cars are getting really good, so good that they're starting to export them to Brazil and Europe and Mexico and taking over market share there, because now the cars are cheaper and better than all the cars produced natively in Europe or Brazil or Mexico. And the only reason we're not seeing it here overtly is because we have all these tariffs and cars that don't come from free trade countries or anything like that. And we still do have Volvos and Polestars, which are Chinese cars. They're owned by Geely, which is a Chinese conglomerate. And they're being sold here. And there's China starting to build factories in Mexico, which is considered a free trade country by us. So once Chinese cars are built in Mexico, they could come in without being Volvos or Polestars, they could come in as Cherries and BYDs and all the other names that, that are Chinese names and still so, be sold here without tariffs.
So if they're
that's
building
huge.
If they're building factories in Mexico, if Chinese manufacturers are building factories in Mexico right now, as soon as those factories are done and they start spitting out cars, that could be like 2-3 years, we could start seeing Chinese cars on the market here in the US. But what about, and they would also circumvent that 100% tariff that they are now faced with because they're made in Mexico and Mexico has a trade agreement with the US. So 2-4 years, look for a Chinese car dealership selling Chinese made cars and maybe for less than anybody else is able to do it. Right, Carl?
Look for $15,000 to $20,000 Chinese electric cars that get 400 plus miles range.
Really? That good and that cheap?
Yes and yes.
Wow, because we're going to talk about a German-made electric car later in the show that has 200 miles range and costs $70,000.
It's a little more. Yeah, it costs a little more than $20,000 and it has a little less range than 400 miles. Yes, it does.
Really? Now, have you driven any of these really cheap ones?
So I have not had personal firsthand experience, but I have spoken to enough people who I have trust and faith in who have that all say the same thing. They're really good. Like they're just getting, you know, because it was easy to say, yeah, bring the Chinese on, ha, 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 ha. That was easy to say, and I felt that way for most of the past 30 plus years. But my feelings and lack of concern about Chinese competition has shifted in the last few years.
We have said the same thing when Japanese cars first came, when Korean cars first came, and who knows, I guess maybe the Chinese are next. We have dismissed them because in the case of Japanese cars in 1960, I remember driving a 1961 Toyo Pet, and it was an abomination. It was just terrible. It had no power. It looked silly. It was just ridiculous. And then, you know, by 15 years later, They were ready with economical cars after the 1973 oil embargo. And also there was a 76 OPEC oil embargo too. And they were ready. The Japanese were ready. And then the Koreans, when they, what was that Hyundai? Was it the XL, the first one?
Okay. As I called it, the Hyundai D-Cell. But anyways.
Oh.
Yeah, that was it. That was really struggling on quality. And then about 25 years ago, Hyundai said, hey, why don't we make quality cars instead? And now they are a major player and they have factories here in the US and Alabama. Right, Michelle, what do you think?
I'd like to suggest that the Chinese learn from those mistakes. And they're not going to come over here or into Europe with crappy cars.
They are listening to the car show right now. It's being monitored.
Did I mention that I welcome our Chinese overlords? Did I tell you guys that yet? I want that up just for you guys. I don't care if anyone else.
Just for the record. So
just for the record, in case anyone else might be listening, but I'm sure they're not. But just for you guys, I welcome our Chinese overlords. Just
you'll get
I want you to know, not them. I don't care, but you know.
So noted, Council. But I wanted to say too. Also, it's not just Volkswagen and Porsche in trouble. BMW and Mercedes just this week recorded steep declines in China. BMWs and Minis are in trouble. The S-Class and the Maybach, which were doing really, really well in China, are off by 13% on deliveries. Then the other problem is for Volkswagen, they're looking at closing a factory in Germany. For the very first time in 87 years of that company.
Yeah.
And that's really hard for them to do because of their labor laws that they have over there. To close a factory in Germany is almost unprecedented. So that would be a
big
deal.
Some would argue that the same thing that makes it hard to close that factory has dictated how much you have to pay the factory workers, which is why they aren't profitable. And now that, you know, it's a tough bind to be in when you can't afford, when you're not legally allowed to close a factory and get rid of workers, and you're not legally allowed to pay workers what you can pay to profitably sell cars. Some might argue that we saw this same thing happen like 40 years ago in, say, Britain, when Britain had a car industry and suddenly they didn't have a car industry anymore. Thankfully, we haven't had any signs of, you know, massive price hikes for labor prices here in the U.S. recently. Hold up that sign again, Mark. But anyways, you know, I'm not worried about all about the American car industry, because there's no indication that we've also had recent renegotiations of contracts that will make it impossible for us to profitably produce cars in this country. None at all.
Wait, I think that was also sarcasm. So you're saying that we are facing the same labor problems that the Germans are, and the, well, the French don't sell here, but yeah, and the English. And there was also an Australian car industry that is no longer, it does not exist anymore.
Yes.
When I went over for the Pontiac GTO, we went to Melbourne, Australia. And at that time, I think there were, what, maybe five GM Holden car plants in Australia. And there were many by Ford. And they're all gone now. And they just import cars. And I don't know. Is that a good thing, a bad thing? We'll see.
I don't know. I don't. I wonder if the Europeans have bankruptcy laws, or if they'd have a situation like we did with Chrysler. Remember in the early 80s, where they needed a corporate bailout, and
right,
they went to Reagan, and Reagan gave it to them. And I wonder if that's something that the German government would do, or the EU would do, because it's EU that decided to impose tariffs on the electric cars that were coming into Europe from China. So it's kind of a situation where the EU might need to step up here.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that's going to
help them out.
I think the biggest thing that's going to happen is, as Carl said, the factories in Mexico, and you know, they could change the free trade agreement, but as of now, they start making cars down there, and you know, but as a consumer, that's a good thing. I mean, we can look at this as an analyst, the way Carl looks at it, or as an enthusiast, the way Michelle might look at it. But just as a consumer, if you want to get a good, cheap car that doesn't emit any tailpipe emissions, this is good for you. Whether it's good for the American worker or the German worker or the Australian worker, that's a whole different argument. But for the American consumer, more cars, the better, right? Who's with me?
Well, it gets tricky if all the cars are much cheaper because they're Chinese cars being sold here, and they're much cheaper. Unfortunately, nobody in America is making any money to buy anything, so it doesn't matter if it costs $15,000 or $1,500. Now there's no jobs for anyone to make money with, to buy cars with. But that would be the cynical way to look at it.
Wait, now you're speaking about a theoretical future scenario right now, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, but seriously, that's, you know, and of course there's the whole manufacturing thing. I mean, I don't want to get into like a geopolitical discussion here. Actually, I do, but I'm sure their listeners don't want me to. But just real quickly,
we only have 58 minutes, Carl. So it's,
oh, wait a sec, 58 minutes left. Shoot, we're going deep. No, but in theory, if you're having your things produced by other countries, then, well, what did we find out during COVID? Just as one quick example, there was a shutdown of a lot of production of things in China too. And that included, for instance, medicine. And then there were people who couldn't get their medicine that they needed in the US, because God forbid the US produced medicine. It all was coming from China. And when China couldn't produce the medicine, there was no medicine for us at all. So, you know, it's always an argument that it's good to have things cost little, but there's also a counter argument that it's not good to be beholden to all foreign countries for your necessities, ranging from cars to drugs.
Okay, cars to drugs. And in the last, what, Michelle? What?
Oh, I was just going to say, and also I think our American OEMs, they're already losing money on every single EV they sell. So how deep can they actually discount these things?
Yes.
To compete?
They can't. If you're paying, you know, when you've got China aligned, the Chinese government aligned with their businesses, not to mention they've spent the last 15 years too also engineering lithium production. You know, they've got basically a stranglehold on lithium production globally. So they can get lithium for much cheaper, and they can pay the people who are making the cars much cheaper, and the government can also incentivize and help them, you know, be profitable, whether they really would have been profitable otherwise. There's kind of like every lever being pulled to make the Chinese car industry super advantageous over our industry on multiple levels.
One thing that I'm hopeful about is that the lithium iron phosphate battery doesn't require a fancy noble elements in it, from my understanding of it. And that could be a thing that changes the industry across the board. That's just my reading of it as a guy who got a C in chemistry in high school. But if you eliminate those rare earth elements that have to go into an electric car battery right now, and just use lithium iron phosphate, which is becoming more and more common. They are in cars that you can buy right now. I think that is also going to change. So in a couple of years, it's going to be a different world out there. What do you think? I think we're out of time on news. So that was a lot about Chinese cars. We'll come back to our usual, mark-like car kind of discussion next week. But now we're going on to reviews. This is the last 20 minutes. We have reviews, and I'm going to start off with a review. We're just going to throw this out there. Bruce Meyer, a good friend of the car show, great guy all around. He was one of the founders of the Peterson Automotive Museum. He did so much. He was feted at the Peterson a week ago during their annual gala. And I think that was just really cool. He's a great guy. He does so much for the car enthusiasts. He puts on the Rodeo Drive Concours. He does a lot of things that you don't really realize he's doing. So they had a big tribute to him at the Peterson last week. And we say thank you, Bruce, for all you do. All right, Carl, you drove something that was not a Chinese car, but was a lot of fun. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is the previous country that's been slowly but surely eroding our profits and our ability to make cars. But I love them just the same, and that's Toyota. Toyota makes fabulous cars. And the most exciting thing about this car to me is that Toyota has like this long history, post the Toyo Pet that you brought up, Mark, of making really exceptional cars on pretty much every level. They're durable. They're reliable. They're value. They have high value. They cost very little. They hold their value well over time. When we do our studies at IC Cars about longest lasting, Toyota's all over the top with Land Cruisers and Sequoias and things like that, and Tacomas and Tundras. So what was Toyota lacking, if anything, over the last increasingly 20, 30, 40 years? Well, most people, myself included, would say personality or fun. And the patriarch of the company, I always think I say his name wrong, but tell me if I'm wrong, Mark. Akio Toyota?
That's it.
And it's spelled T-O-Y-O-D-O because...
D-A, right?
Toyota. Yeah, you're right. T-O-Y-O-D-A, not T-A, because they thought that was too Japanese sounding. So the car company's called Toyota, but the guy who owns it and is the patriarch and his family's behind it is Toyota with a D. Anyways, he's a great guy. He's very fun. He's very funny and he's very enthusiastic. And he made basically the mantra starting like 15 years ago. I remember at one of the shows in Europe, him standing up there basically saying, we're going to have fun cars. We're going to have fun cars. And you look over the last 10 years, especially of Toyotas, and especially in the last 5 years. And sure enough, I mean, the Camry is a far more engaging car to drive today than it was 10 years ago. And I used to always make the joke that like the Honda version of the car versus the Toyota version of the car, the Toyota was a little more refined, a little quieter, and probably would have slightly less mechanical issues. But the Honda would be really good in all those things too, and it would be really fun to drive. And so if it was a Civic versus a Corolla or a Accord versus Camry, it was like, well, do you want just the most reliable car or do you want the most fun to drive car? By the way, the Toyotas aren't terrible to drive and the Hondas don't break down a lot, but there's just this slight thing. Well, Toyota decided to go after the fun element that they were commonly considered not quite as good at. And a lot of the recent models have done this. And the car that I drove just this past week, and the embargo just broke this past week, so now I can talk about it, is the new GR Corolla. Now that came out in 2022, but it only had a 6-speed manual transmission. It now has an additional option as an 8-speed automatic. And the exciting thing about that is that it means people who don't know how to drive 3-pedal cars, and let's be honest, that's a lot of people, almost all the people under certain ages now, sadly. But if you want to not deal with 3 pedals, the new GR Corolla will have an 8-speed automatic. And according to Toyota, it pulls the exact same lap times as the manual version, so you don't get any slower with it. And it's got other improvements like a cooler, a transmission cooler, and a sub-radiator, bigger openings on the front of the car to help it cool better. It's just a really well-executed car. Oh, and it makes 22 pound-feet of torque more. It used to make 273, now it makes 295 pound-feet.
Okay, what's it like to drive, Carl?
It's really fun. The bottom line is that it's an incredibly engaging car. Okay, we're used to Civic SIs and Civic Type Rs being really fun to drive. And Toyota, again, wanted to finally have something to go up against that. And this Corolla, it's a three-cylinder engine, 300 horsepower, now 295 horsepower, or 295 pound-feet of torque. Plenty of power, pulls the car hard, but it also has great steering feel. And they even upgraded the rear suspension. They changed the trailing arm location, and they changed the rear tuning so that it stays even more planted coming out of corners at the track. And it also has a all-wheel drive system, and you can bias it from front to rear. And if you put it in track mode, it sends up to 70% of the power to the rear tires for more rotation when you're coming out of low speed corners.
Where did you drive that? Did you get to drive it at a racetrack?
Starlet Motor Speedway is where I drove it. And they have
Starlet?
Charlotte.
Where?
You know.
Oh, Charlotte. Oh. Starlet, because Starlet is an earlier Toyota.
What?
And it was rear wheel drive, and it was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Okay, Charlotte. All right. And but Starlet, were you on the Speedway. Oval? Or both. Did they
oval course? And infield. So we were going around corners, you know, aggressively that were turns, and then we were stuck on the banked oval, getting up to nice high speeds on that too, because they really wanted to show off the car's capabilities. And it's just a fun car. And again, to me, that's the most important thing. Like, if someone would have told me even 5-7 years ago that there would be a Toyota that was as fun to drive as the Civic Type R, or even the SI, I would have been like, and there is. So that's really the news here. But you still get all the same durability and reliability and, you know, resale value and all the things that Toyota's still known for.
Does it look like, does it have wings and flaps and stuff, or is it kind of stealth?
It's got, so if you get the top line, there's three trims, and if you get the top line one, you get a carbon fiber roof, and you get these hood vents. It's got these cool three exhaust tips because it's a three-cylinder, 1.6-liter engine, three cylinders, 300 horsepower.
Who would have thought that we would be looking at a performance car with a three-cylinder engine?
And a Toyota badge too, a three-cylinder Toyota badged car that's 300 horsepower and really fun to drive. So fabulous car. Kudos to Toyota for making it.
The world is changing. Things are changing. I don't like it, Michelle.
Is that for 2025?
Yes, that's it's a 2025 Toyota Corolla GR. Yes, or GR Corolla, technically.
There's not a huge difference. They add the automatic transmission and they give a little bit more power and torque, but yes. It's not a huge revolutionary difference. It's like almost like a mid-cycle facelift almost.
Sure, exactly. And they retune their suspension to keep it better planted. And I think they redid that torque distribution front to rear and all. I don't think it could go up to 70% more.
Okay.
70% to the rear before. So they definitely made the car better, but it's not like the 2022 through 2024 version was slow and unfun.
That's
it was
right.
Really fun.
Yeah. I have yet to drive that. I got to line one of those up and find a rally course somewhere. You know that Ryan Turek in Formula Drift, they just finished Formula Drift last weekend. He has been driving a Corolla for, I don't know how long. So it's out there, man. It's out there. And it sounds like a lot of fun. And actually, Ryan Turek's boss, Steph Papadakis at Papadakis Racing, the team that has won how many times? I think 5 titles in Formula Drift overall. He has a Corolla GR, not this new one that Carl just drove, but the year before, I think it was 2022. And he seems to really like it. So this guy could get anything he wants, and that's the car that he's driving around in. So good for them. Good for them. Now we're going to go up a little bit to a slightly more practical car with a lot of nostalgia value to it. Now, I don't know about you guys, but everybody else was growing up in families with either station wagons or minivans. We had vans, and Michelle is doing the gagging motion. Somebody give her the Heimlich quick. We had vans. We had Ford vans. Oh. And then as soon as I had any sway over the say, we bought a Volkswagen van because I just thought Volkswagen vans were so cool. Carl and I have driven the new VW ID Buzz. It is, of course, as you know, an electric car. It is revolutionary. I was up at the full program in San Francisco driving the car. And I got to tell you, man, there were things that I didn't like about it. So it's not like perfect, but overall, I thought it was really, really cool. And I liked it. Their drawbacks, let's just get the drawbacks out of the way right off the top. It'll only go 234 miles on a charge. Now, people are going to say that that is not enough of a charge for a modern car. I will say, yeah, but how often do you go to Las Vegas? And don't go to Las Vegas. That's what I say. that's my reaction to that. 234 miles, and the price, the cheapest one you can get is 60 grand. Starts at right around 60 grand, maybe 61. And the most expensive one, I think, is 71 something. So it's too expensive. It doesn't go far enough on a charge. And I am really disappointed that they changed the front end design, just not the engineering part of it, but just the shape. My original 1964 VW van had that wonderful flying V shape on the front. And if you remember, the Volkswagen Bulli that we saw 20 years ago or however long at the Geneva Motors Show, that's how long we've been waiting for this thing. I think it had the flying V shape to it. This new one does not have that, so I'm a little bit disappointed in that. But overall, I really like it, and I wish I had that much money to throw around. Let me throw out a couple of more specs on this car. The battery is a 91 kilowatt hour lithium ion battery. Of course, it's stowed under the floor, like seemingly almost everything is nowadays. It makes the rear wheel drive version makes 282 horsepower. The all wheel drive four motion version makes 335. So, you know, and they say that that's good for 0 to 60, I don't know, 7 seconds or so. So it's not, you know, you can get up the freeway on ramp in this thing. It's not eligible for the Tesla supercharger network. Volkswagen, of course, is right in there with Electrify America, whose chargers can drive you crazy because half of them don't work. And you could see why I'm not advocating vandalizing anything, but you can maybe understand why some of them have been vandalized. It's wrong. I am pointing that out. It is wrong. Do not do it. But come on, Electrify America. Get out there and fix your chargers, for goodness sake. But if you plug in your new ID Buzz at a 200 kilowatt hour station, you can go from 10% charge to 80% charge in 26 minutes, which is pretty good. Carl, you drove it. What do you think?
Well, first, I just got to make sure this is clear, Mark. Beyond the fact that it costs way too much and doesn't have enough range, you're really a fan of this electric car. I just want to make sure I'm clear there.
Well said. Well said.
But you take away those two things and the car is awesome. I 100% agree with everything you said. And I was prepared to be, you know, nonplussed by the car or maybe slightly plussed because it is cool looking maybe, and that's it. And I couldn't deny how much I enjoyed the car after driving it all day just today here at the testing for North American Car and Truck of the Year back here in Detroit. And what I would say that kind of counters a little bit what you were saying, certainly on the price-wise, is the car really is premium. I mean, you get inside there, and it was really effective because I got from that car into like a Honda Prologue afterwards, another 100% EV when I was testing all these cars here. And it was just like so kind of disappointing. You know, I got in that Prologue and all everything, the materials and the colors and all, it was just like, okay, now I'm depressed because I was just in this really fun, happy, bright car with high quality materials, and now I'm getting in another electric car. Prologue costs a lot less than the ID Buzz, so, you know. But so you get this very kind of upscale premium look and feel to the interior. You get, of course, the cool exterior styling, even without the flying V that you mentioned, Mark. You get plenty of power. I had a rear wheel drive one, so it wasn't even the most powerful version. And honestly, I was also surprised, even by electric car standards with the instant torque and all that. I think probably what it was is that the car's big. Like the car, I shouldn't say it's big. Actually, that's the magic too. The car feels super roomy inside because it is. And you probably saw the same presentation, Mark, that I saw today by the Volkswagen folks. But the car has more interior space than a Chevy Suburban. And yet it's like 2 feet shorter than the Suburban front
okay,
to back.
Okay. I gotta stop you and say that probably half of that is the dashboard and the space between the dashboard and the windshield. That is like, it's like a aircraft carrier deck there. You expect like F-18s to be landing in front of you. But I just had to throw that out. Please go on, Carl.
Yeah, that's true. If you wanted to like, you know, put some shelving up there to store luggage. Now that might get into the problem of like if the airbags go off or if you want forward visibility, but there is a lot of space up there. But you know what? That was the same thing in the new Beetle. To me, that felt right. Very Volkswagen-ish because the right. Beetle, people joked about that too. It's like, what is going on? Because the Volkswagen Beetle's shape was so curvy, there was no way they could make it not meet with the dash and the windshield at the bottom of the windshield way ahead of where the driver was or the steering wheel was.
It's where exterior design takes precedence over, you know, interior volume usage. Plus, you have to have a crumple zone. In my 64, 77, I had a 79. The crumple zone was your kneecaps and your yes. shin bones. And it was just, yeah. It was a suicide machine, those things. I don't know how they're even allowed on the road anymore. They're so dangerous. This thing has crumple zones. It meets all FMVSS government standards for safety. And, it, you know, if the price you have to pay for that is a lot of room on the dashboard, I say I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no, that's the joke about a lot of those old cars is that you were the crumple zone in those cars. But it's a really appealing car. I liked it more than I planned to, more than I wanted to. But it also made me only a little, you know, it only made me a little more disappointed in the range because it's like, look, I don't think I'd have gone and bought one of these things probably anyways. But it's easier for me to tell myself, no, don't buy it because 231 mile range, you know, I can't even get to Vegas without having to stop, you know, and I think the car would be, you know, masterful for running around, you know, a local area with kids. If you've got a family and you're never going to road trip, you're just going to go to soccer practice locally and all that, car would be masterful, but you can't go that far with it. So that's a bummer.
I would say that for the price, yeah, I'm thinking, okay, one thing, you know how we talk on these press trips, there were a lot of people talking about how when the new Beetle came out, there was a huge spike in demand and people were mm-hmm. suing dealers and everything. A year later, year and a half later, you know, there were acres and acres of those things sitting on lots and you could buy one, you could just come up and wheel and deal. So anyway, maybe that'll happen. Carl has his crystal ball. It's more accurate than mine. So we'll see. Maybe the prices will drop after a year or two and I can afford one. We have just 1 minute to go here. First of all, we have to thank Carl Brower for, I don't know what time it is in Detroit. It's probably like 3 a.m. back there. And for calling in. Thank you, Carl. And Michelle, tell us about our social media.
All right. So we do have a page on Facebook. It's called, surprise, surprise, The Car Show on KPFK 90.7 FM. So give us a like and a follow if you get a chance.
Yeah, go there and stick around because coming up, we have Rhapsody in Black. Great music you never knew you loved. Every time I listen to that show, it's something new that I think, hey, I like that. And you know, you're humming along and it's really cool. Bill Garner is putting that on. And if you can give some money to KPFK at kpfk.org, please do it. So we'll see you next week on The Car Show.
So Anthony McGinnis, you came by at Cicla Vida to give your donation to KPFK. What? Why?
Hey, the content on KPFK, nobody can match it. It's so versatile. I mean, it's diversified. I mean, I can hear my old school music, and I can listen to some artists I've never heard. They're in the community, they're open-minded, and I like that. The news doesn't seem censored, okay? So the news on there, the speakers, excuse me, and all the young talent. That's amazing. I hear some artists that we should give more support to. I can see they don't go mainstream because they're struggling artists. We know that in LA. And I appreciate KPFK for giving them that you know, that venue. Hey, we all need to help. It's a village. Yeah.
And you're a bike person.
Yeah, I'm a bike. At 66, I'm still riding. Yeah. That's what keeps you young.
Have you ever heard the saying, the only person's behavior I can control is my own? Well, here's your chance to exercise the power of one. Make the decision to support KPFK right now and call with your contribution. Your individual decision helps support the programs that are important.